Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. Are you going through menopause or perimenopause? If you are, then you know it can be a struggle to find comfort in your body. Even when you're done with menopause, you might still feel like a wet sock on a busy highway. You need to try Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep, feeling tired all the time, bloating, gas. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all these things. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 439.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and I'm so thrilled to share with you my newest conversation with someone I just admire and respect so much, and I talk about her all the time. I've been fortunate to spend some time with her in person recently, including attending her 2-day polyvagal informed yoga therapy workshop that was lovely, beautiful. I highly recommend everything this guest does. My guest today is Dr. Arielle Schwartz. Arielle Schwartz is a clinical psychologist and leading voice in the healing of trauma. She's an internationally sought out teacher and author of 7 books, including the Complex PTSD Workbook, the Post-Traumatic Growth Guidebook, EMDR Therapy and Somatic Psychology, and Applied Polyvagal Theory and Yoga. As the founder of the Center for Resilience-Informed Therapy, she offers a mind-body approach to therapy for trauma and informational mental health and wellness updates through her writing, public speaking, social media presence, and blog. She believes that the journey of trauma recovery is an awakening of the spiritual heart, and that really comes through in all of the beautiful things that she shares. I definitely recommend getting her newest book, Applied Polyvagal Theory in Yoga. And if you don't know about her vagus nerve yoga YouTube videos, they're recorded, they're offered live and recorded and shared on YouTube. So you can attend live for a donation. And, you know, it's up to you how much you choose to donate or if you donate at all. And her work is just so impactful, powerful, and wonderful. And it's been deeply nourishing to me. So let's dive right into my conversation with Arielle about her newest book. And if you are a therapist or just someone who's on a healing journey, there will be so much information in this conversation you are going to learn. So thank you so much, as always, for listening. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so happy to once again be speaking with Dr. Ariel Schwartz. Ariel, thank you so much for coming back to Therapy Chat again today.
Thank you, Laura. I love my time with you. It's a joy.
For me too. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm super excited to talk about your newest book. You know, we talked about it a little bit in our networker conversation, but now we're going to really get deeper into it. And let's start off, for anybody who doesn't know who you are or hasn't heard our previous conversations, with you just telling everyone a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Sure. Happy to. So I'm a clinical psychologist. I live here in Boulder, Colorado. And the initial draw for me to come here to Colorado was back in the mid-1990s to study at Naropa University, where I got my master's in somatic psychology at a time when somatics felt very fringe. And it's been so beautiful to watch the field of somatic psychology emerge into center stage in the almost 30 years since I began studying it. I went back to school after my master's in somatics to get my degree in clinical psychology and did my dissertation research on the integration of mind-body therapies into clinical practice, including mindfulness, including breath awareness, relaxation strategies, yoga, and how do we bridge that gap between those really beautiful, time-tested, age-old strategies of regulation into our clinical practice with clients. And then I'm also an EMDR teacher as well as provider and do lots of other fun things, including teaching yoga, which I've done also for over 30 years.
Yes, and you have your sort of brand of yoga, polyvagal yoga, right? Vagus nerve yoga.
Yeah. And the vagus nerve yoga is applying the principles of polyvagal theory into the yoga practice and really working with this kind of, you know, for those of you that aren't sure what the vagus nerve is yet, it's our 10th cranial nerve, and it's the primary mind-body communication highway that is helping your brain register what's happening in your body and then send signals down to your body to respond to our environment.
So it sends signals down, and does the vagus nerve send signals back? Something like
right.
that?
Right. So it's bidirectional. And in terms of receiving the information from the body, actually the majority of the communications move from body up to brain in the sense of, you know, your brain really needs to know how fast is my heart beating? How rapid is my breathing? How is my digestive system doing? What are the neurochemicals that are moving around my gut? And taking all of that information about hormones, about neurotransmitters, about our emotions, bringing that up to the brainstem, and then the brainstem using that information to help us best respond or sometimes survive to environmental challenges. And, you know, I think that this bidirectional piece, one of the elements of this is that the majority of those communications are going from body up to brain, but so many of our therapeutic interventions are going from brain to body. If I think about this differently, maybe I can change how I'm feeling and here. And it kind of misses this biological equation that actually, if we change how we're breathing, if we change simple things like our posture, if we embrace embodied self-compassion as a felt sense experience. Like, I'm going to adjust my posture just hearing that. That was so cute. Right? If I embody the qualities of loving kindness toward myself, I feel different in here and my thoughts soften. My brain comes back more into the present moment. My mindset is more growth oriented. So we start to feel more what we'll call cognitive flexibility when we have this resource of embodied nourishment.
I love how you explained that. Thank you. I think people are hearing a lot about polyvagal theory, which is great. And people are hearing a lot about like vagal toning, but I don't think we often hear why that matters and how it relates to our sense of well-being. Even when you said mindset, it's like when we think about mindset, people are often talking about change the way you look at something, change the way you think about it, affirmations and things like that, which are great. But if it's coming from within that, you know, our mindset is tending towards the negative or a sense of threat or danger, it's not as simple as just telling yourself not to think that.
But you packed a lot in that those few sentences there. So I want to unpack a little bit of it.
Sure.
I think this term vagal toning is worth pausing on for a moment and defining it. So when we speak about toning the vagus nerve, we'll kind of break that down into what is vagal tone. And vagal tone is something that we can measure, and it's measured through something called heart rate variability. And heart rate variability is looking at the relationship between your breath and your heartbeats and noticing that every time we have an inhalation, we'll get more heartbeats on that inhalation pattern, which engages a little bit of your sympathetic nervous system. Our sympathetic nervous system is our go system. It mobilizes us to meet the demands of the world. Every exhalation, our heartbeats slow down a little bit, and it engages more of our parasympathetic system. Our parasympathetic system in times of safety takes us into our rest and digest response, or our relaxation response. And it's regenerative for your body. And it also takes us or invites us to rest into stillness. So it's more of an immobilizing system compared to the mobilization of the sympathetic movement. So healthy vagal tone is a balance between our sympathetic and our parasympathetic systems, which allows us to move into excitatory states and recover into restful states. And that ideally we have this rhythm in our nervous system that's moving between sympathetic and parasympathetic. But when we look at unprocessed stress or trauma or emotional challenge, when we look at our mental health symptoms, most of them are reflective of some form of imbalance in our autonomic nervous system, some form of imbalance between that sympathetic and parasympathetic, those two branches. So if we're feeling, for example, keyed up, anxious, nervous, we tend to be more sympathetically driven. In contrast, if we're feeling more shut down, collapsed, hopeless, helpless, withdrawn, isolating, that tends to reflect that we are in more of a parasympathetic imbalance. Now, how can parasympathetic nervous system both take us into rest and digest and relax, and sometimes take us into collapse or shutdown? That question is what we call the parasympathetic paradox. Now, one more little teaching point, if I may. Mm-hmm. The parasympathetic nervous system is always associated with your vagus nerve. So your vagus nerve basically puts you into parasympathetic. And so now we have that same question. How can the vagus nerve sometimes bring us into calm, peaceful, ease, stillness, rest, meditation, healthy sleep? And that same vagus nerve can sometimes bring us into shutdown, collapse, withdrawal, that state. So that formed the basis of Steve Porges' polyvagal theory. And polyvagal theory looks at the two primary circuits or branches of the vagus nerve that produce or result in very different nervous system states, both that are both parasympathetic. So we can have a upward, socially engaged circuit of the vagus nerve that he coins the social engagement system. It's our ventral vagal circuit. And this ventral vagal circuit is orienting us to cues of safety and connection. And from a biological standpoint, it's wired to help us downregulate out of the defensive state of the sympathetic nervous system for the purpose of connection. We can think of this as that connection is a biological imperative. So we have this one circuit that's really wired to help us orient to cues of connection and safe enough. We want to use that qualifier on safety. I'm safe enough. so that I can rest into closeness with another person. And that's necessary for bonding and attachment and nursing and reproduction and procreation and all of these, you know, great things that we need. The secondary circuit of the vagus nerve travels down below the diaphragm into all of our digestive organs. And using the cues of that upper circuit that let us know that we're safe enough, that dorsal vagal lower pathway helps us go into rest and digest. However, if we have cues and through our eyes and through our ears that that there is some kind of threat, maybe a life threat, maybe a danger, maybe there's no way to escape that danger, then the same parasympathetic nervous system has a survival response that puts us into some kind of shutdown, a freeze, a faint, withdrawal from the world. And last thing I'll say is that there's typically a tiered response to threat, which means that we might initially respond to the threat out there with an attempt to reconnect, to reach out for help, to call for help in some way or another. We're going to reach for another person to restore a sense of safety. So there's one more piece here that's worth describing, which is what in polyvagal theory is referred to as the tiered response to threat. And the tiered response to threat suggests that initially when we experience something that's disconcerting, challenging, threatening, or dangerous, we will attempt to resolve it using our upper ventral vagal social engagement circuit. We're going to call for help or reach for connection or seek out sources of safety. And hopefully that resolves the threat. But if it doesn't, the next layer that kicks into gear is our sympathetic system, our fight-flight system, right? How can we get away from this or protect ourselves from it? And hopefully that resolves the threat and we can go back into it's okay now and I can come back into some kind of homeostatic balance of my nervous system. If that doesn't resolve the threat, then we go into our third tier, which is driven by that parasympathetic shutdown. In some way or another, we will withdraw or hide or collapse like a turtle in its shell, like a possum that goes into a feigned death response. And all of those strategies are, in a sense, wired in us as well as a way to basically survive a potential life threat. And, you know, I use the word homeostasis in there, which is that hopefully upon restoration of a sense of safety, we can come back into this relative balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic. We come back to healthy vagal tone. We come back to this capacity to feel that we're capable to flexibly respond to the world around us. However, if we have, you know, some kind of interruption or the inability to restore a sense of safety, we can get stuck in those threat-based nervous system states. We can get stuck more in that sympathetic, or we can get stuck more in the parasympathetic. And then there's both mental health consequences of that, and there's physical health consequences of that. So vagal toning is aiming to restore that homeostatic balance.
Okay. So first of all, thank you for explaining that so clearly. I was going to ask you before about what vagal tone meant anyway. So we were totally on track for where I was hoping we would go. But I want to ask you something else about that. I don't want to make this too teachy-teachy, but one of my biases is that I see so many people who don't, and I was in this group too, like don't see themselves as someone who's experienced some kind of adversity, even though now I know after years and years and years and years of healing work that I've experienced a lot of adversity when I was younger. Instead of asking you about what I would normally say, which is like, how would people know if they've been through something that might have made their, and I'm, you know, with the point being about how easily we're able to return to a sense of homeostasis, because I always feel when I have some kind of trauma reaction, I always feel like I shouldn't be feeling like this. And why can't I just feel okay again, you know, like as fast as I want to. But would you say something about like, what are the quality of experiences that people would have had to have the ability to flexibly return? Like, if, you know, growing up, what would be the sort of environment that would lead someone to having a robustly healthy vagal tone without like having to go and work on it? If there is any human that exists in this world now who's in that place.
Right. So rather than asking what caused the detriment to our vagal tone, what builds it and what would be the optimal environment that would help us have that kind of built in, what we might call resilience or, you know, stress inoculation in a sense. And there's a few things that I'll offer. One is that having quote unquote the good enough attachment is certainly a builder of vagal tone. And there's some research that shows that the tone of the vagus nerve begins even in the third trimester in utero, as well as in our first several years of life. And so that upper vagal circuit, the one that is helping us orient towards safety and connection to downregulate out of that defensive state, that circuit is being what we call myelinated during those early phases of life, those very kind of key neuroplastic time of life where a lot of the brain is being wired and developed and pruned and so forth. And so if we look at what is myelination, myelination is a fatty coating that surrounds a circuitry of neurons in the brain and how our nervous system is then also wired into the body. And it allows that nerve pathway to move more quickly. It allows the signals to proceed in lightning speed, right? So a great example of myelinating a nerve pathway is what happens when we build kind of another form of memory, which we call procedural memory. Procedural memory is basically body-based memories that we build, for example, when we're learning to tie our shoe or learning to ride a bicycle or learning to play an instrument. And, you know, for, you know, any of you that have learned to ride a bike at some phase of your life, you know, the first many times it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, you fall, you don't have that sense of balance in your body. It's awkward, right? And then there is this tipping point moment where all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, I've got this. And you don't even realize no one's holding the back of the bike anymore. And your little feet are pedal, 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 right? It's such a cool moment. And your body has organized around this activity. And the more that you do that activity, the more that that becomes habitual, right? You don't even have to think about it in order to have that balance and that coordination. And it's really fun. The next thing you know, you're going, look, Ma, no hands. I've got this, right? Like, you can do tricks on the bike. Cool.
Mountain biking.
Right, right. You add layers of challenge. So let's go back to the myelination of the vagus nerve. That too, actually, like, it needs a foundation of safety. We need a foundation of the secure attachment, in a sense, and the vagal tone of the parents actually transfers to the vagal tone of the infant. There's a very strong correlation between, well, I'll say a lot of the research happens with the mom, but between a mother who has that calm and compassionate and loving presence and a regulated vagal tone that then transfers to that regulation of the baby's nervous system. And once we have that secure base, the next layer that builds more of that vagal tone is healthy challenge, that we actually recognize that the secure attachment isn't developed simply because we've got this perfect mother who's always attuned. You know, it actually comes from the normal ruptures that happen in any relationship, the misattunements, the misunderstandings, the not coming right away when the baby is upset, not purposefully, but just because we're simultaneously trying to cook a meal in the kitchen and we can't get there right away. But when we come and we attend to the impact of that was so hard, you had to wait for me, that was scary, or whatever that is, and we facilitate the repair process, now the nervous system goes through a little bit of a stress response back into a regulated everything is okay response, and that we build more capacity through these small stress responses within the good enough relationship to then handle that. I can go into small, short-lived periods of distress, trust that I can make it through to the other side, and that reconnection brings resolution.
Yeah. So it's the safety, enough safety, enough, you know, attunement and enough repair.
Yeah. And then the you know, all of this begs the next essential question, which is, so what happens if I didn't get that in childhood, right? Either because I was in so much lack of safety that there was not enough attention to the ground of safety or repair when ruptures happened. Or conversely, sometimes we see the opposite picture where there was so much protection that I'm not going to let you skin your knee. I'm never going to leave you. I'm never going to let you experience any distress. And so we can see kind of both sides of the equation can impair a sense of trust in my own capacity to handle challenge when it arises.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for explaining that. So I think, you know, I just think I want people to hear sort of the environment that provides this ability to develop the way that is optimal for being as humans, and then what can interrupt. And it's not always just a parent who was unkind, or I know one of the things that they say is if your parent was very fearful, that it can lead your system to feeling very, you know, primed for threat, even though you may have been kept safe all the time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, going back to this kind of key piece, like, so what if I didn't get this in childhood? What if I didn't get kind of that optimal growth zone, right? Then, you know, am I kind of screwed up for life? Or is there a way to strengthen this and build that neural pathway at other phases of our lives? And so that's the beauty of what we call neuroplasticity and positive neuroplasticity, or neuroplasticity that facilitates our growth in the wanted direction, is that we can engage in strategies that both create that foundation of safety for our nervous systems, and then from there begin to challenge our nervous system to handle chosen small amounts of stress input, to know that we can handle that and come back into active recovery. So that's what vagal toning practices do. They create the ground of safety, and they offer small amounts of challenge to the nervous system with active recovery phases.
When I have breaks during the day, I love spending time in nature. My bird feeders give me so much joy. But when I try to take a picture of the beautiful birds I see, they always fly off before I can get a good picture. Today I saw a goldfinch, two woodpeckers, and a chickadee. And for that 5 minutes, my system settled down. I felt calm. I felt connected with nature. That's why I'm so excited about the FeatherSnap Scout. The FeatherSnap Scout is a new Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeder that lets you connect to nature in a really cool way. It has a top-of-the-line camera so you can snap high-definition pics and videos of your backyard birds and then identify them. It's easy to set up and easy to use with built-in solar panels that mean less recharging and more bird watching. The feeder pairs with a FeatherSnap app that lets you organize your favorite pictures, learn fun facts about hundreds of species, and even earn badges for IDing new birds. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
So I'm thinking while you're talking, I'm thinking about your yoga classes that I've, you know, I do your class and I feel like I was with you, but it's on video and, you know, it's recorded. So you weren't knowing we were there together, but I'm like, oh, it feels like a regular yoga class, but it's different too. The areas that you're focusing on and the ways that you're leading the practice are, I don't know. I guess nonverbal. I'm not like able to put it into words, but there's something very, it feels very healing to do that.
I'm glad you experience it that way, first of all. And then it comes through even in a video on YouTube. Yes. And there are some very key elements that structure the practice that I offer. And I also teach this. The next round of the Applied Polyvagal Theory and Yoga course starts in December of 2024. So those of you that are like, I want to learn how to do this, come join me. But yeah. It's a 30-hour course. And, you know, if I were to kind of give a few nuggets of what structures this particular form of class, the first is that it's inviting you as a practitioner to get to know the state of your nervous system that you are bringing with you onto the mat. So we start with awareness or self-discovery. And, you know, sometimes I guide this through a little bit of a 5-point check-in of noticing the state of mind, noticing how your body is coming in today. Do you feel tense? Do you feel sluggish, fatigued? Noticing your emotional tone, noticing your breath, right? Am I breathing fully? Does my breath feel constricted? Does it feel fast? Does it feel shallow? Noticing the state of your energy, right? Whether you feel really spacey or dispersed, or whether you feel heavy and condensed. And all of those layers of mind, body, breath, emotions, energy are feedback about the state of your nervous system. And then we can explore, what does your nervous system need from that ground of self-awareness? We move from there into practices that help kind of create a little bit more balance or that foundation of safety in your nervous system. So we'll bring in some vagal toning practices right into the yoga class. And, you know, there's many, many of them. I have a list of, I think, over about 50 vagal toning practices that I've gathered over the years of studying this. And I usually bring in, you know, 4 or 5 of those to start. They're seated practices. They're really gentle. And many people who take my class just take the first 20 to 30 minutes of the class just to come in for the benefit of the community, the poetry. There's always poems that I bring in, as you know. And then there is this vagal toning component of the class. And that can be plenty of input for your nervous system. For those that continue, we move into the next phase of the class, which is moving into just a little bit more challenge, where we actually are broadening your nervous system's capacity to handle small bits of stress input, chosen challenge for your nervous system with active phases of recovery. And then we complement that with very energizing practices, like what you might think of as a typical yoga class at that point, right? We can go into mountain pose, warrior poses, 5-pointed star, horse, you know, goddess, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, basically we go into some very physical practice and, again, staying with that challenge zone. But so long as it feels good, playful, energizing, empowering, hallelujah. Like, we're in that sweet zone of engaging the sympathetic nervous system for the purpose of play. And then the final phase of the class brings you into the calming practices, the restorative, the receiving, and then allowing yourself to immobilize back down into chosen stillness and helping your nervous system with all of the practices that built up to that moment, really orient to the cues that you are safe here and now to finally rest.
Yes. And that's kind of what you're teaching about in your newest book. Am I right? These types of practices that you teach in your class.
Exactly. And I have two books and the flip book that's here behind me. So I have the Therapeutic Yoga for Trauma book is oriented towards the practitioner, and it basically takes you through the arc of a mat-based class. And then it concludes with the arc of a 6-week class for those of you that are yoga teachers and want to incorporate this into your teaching with others. And then the flip book and the newest book are oriented more towards practitioners. So here's the Applied Polyvagal Theory in Yoga. And whether you are a yoga teacher, whether you are a therapist, whether you're a coach, these kind of bring to you very user-friendly practices that can be brought in for 5 minutes of a session or for 15 minutes of a session, depending on how much of this you want to bring in, that are either balancing for the nervous system, adding those small bits of challenge in with active recovery phases, or bringing in energizing and calming. So all of those strategies that we just spoke about of the model are incorporated into really all three of those products.
I'm so glad that you put this out, all of this stuff, and make it accessible in different ways, different access points for people. So something that I know from my own experience, and I'd love to talk about, my back just relaxed a little bit. I'm like, ooh, I don't know what that was. But I mentioned to you before, for myself, I've been on a healing journey for, you know, I mean, I guess life is a healing journey, but I've been intentionally working on healing for more than 20 years. And probably the first 10 years was just like, what is going on in here? Where is the thing that needs to change, or what is causing this, or whatever it is? And then since then, it's been, you know, incorporating, you know, trauma therapy, movement practices, including yoga, energy work, breath work, all of these different things, and brain spotting. And it's, for one thing, it's like, once you get in there, you find just how much is there and how, you know, what I realize now is that I was so frozen for so long and I really didn't know it, because I'm still going through life. I'm feeling, I'm reacting to things. I'm, you know, working and going to school and taking care of kids and doing all the things that we do. But it's been really, I think the back body is what I didn't know was like missing in my experience. I remember, and I might have told you this before, I remember I went to a training one time and we did this thing where with a partner, the partner would use like a pencil eraser and touch us on the back of our body in some place. And the person touched me on the back of my calf and I couldn't feel it at all until they were really pressing in, and I had no idea that I couldn't feel the back of me until that. And I still didn't know what in the world to make of it for probably another 5 years. But as I begin to unfreeze and gain access to not only a lot of why I was frozen, but also this other whole experience of life that's really like colorful, I'll say, just so much more than I could have possibly known I was missing out on by being in a very sort of analytical way of living that protected me from feeling so much, even though I still felt a lot. So one piece I wanted to say is that that process is a beautiful, like, discovery of, you know, buried treasure, but there are also a surprising number of buried minds, you know,
yes.
Lack of a better word, that, you know, our unexploded ordnance maybe would be the right thing to call it, where it's just like, whoa, didn't know this was here. Not necessarily like things I didn't remember. I mean, some of that, but also just like awarenesses of like, wow.
Well, things that you made normal because you had to.
Yeah. And the way your life just shapes around those things and those things being normal. And then when you realize how they impacted you, or you begin to realize how they impacted you, it's confusing. It's not necessarily what you expect when you're doing healing work, you know?
Yeah.
It can be scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. I think that when I teach the vagal toning classes, sometimes the feedback that I get is, I didn't expect that this would make me cry. It was a surprise to me when I did this that I felt so vulnerable. Yeah. And, you know, like we think I'm doing something good for me, I'm doing something healing, or I'm getting onto my yoga mat, I'm supposed to feel strong and empowered. But instead, what I felt was vulnerable or sad or afraid or angry, right? And so you know, when we look at this process of opening up the connection between the body and the brain, we're opening up this portal of awareness. And that awareness can both be awareness of pleasure and ease and safety and connection, but it also is just pure awareness of what is that maybe I had pushed down or wasn't fully aware of at the time. And so now I'm aware of the emotions that I didn't get to feel during a time of just coping, just needing to push through. And sometimes it's a little bit surprising that that's kind of waiting in the wings, just still there until we take the time or have the time to go toward that and attend to it and bring it center stage into our awareness.
Yeah. And, you know, that just made me think of something else that I think maybe this is a good ending point to touch on. It seems that I wonder what you think about this. Many women in particular who, you know, have had life be very focused on caregiving until kids grow and leave the nest. And then suddenly it's like, wait a minute, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, like we become like, hey, what the heck? You know, like, because I picture the way you are. Well, many of us are as little girls where it's like, you know, like, I want this, I want that, this. I know how I like things to be. And then, you know, we still sort of slowly become socialized to be more like docile, submissive, agreeable, you know, sweet, nice, to get more approval. And then, you know, that segues into becoming a caregiver. And not everyone follows this path, but I did. Actually, I was like the very rebellious. And then this almost like buttoned up. You probably wouldn't recognize the way I used to be, like compared to now, you know, just this like, I'm a good girl. And, you know, and then my kids grow and I don't have to. Well, not only not have to, but I can't focus on them all the time anymore and put myself aside because they don't need that. And it's really not even healthy for them, for me to be. But, you know, I think that's when some women discover healing, and maybe perimenopause and menopause play a part in that too, somehow.
Sure. Talk about opening up the gates to a lot of your felt experience, right? Hormones are a profound portal.
That's true. So is there anything to say about that in terms of like the vagus nerve? Like, because, you know, it's your endocrine system, your whole system seems to be mediated by this. But is that just not really related here?
It's all quite connected. Again, there's a lot to unpack in what you in your own personal share. But if I just lean into that last question around our reproductive organs and hormones and the vagus nerve, the vagus nerve connects all the way down. When it goes below the diaphragm, it connects down not only to our digestive organs, but our reproductive organs as well. And you know, into that hormone equation where when our body goes into us, I'll speak for us as women for a moment, right? When we have different hormonal states of our cycle, right? We have high estrogen phases, high progesterone phases, and that those phases of our cycle actually bring about very different embodied states and very different emotional states. So that we might have states where we can feel that there's more water retention or inflammation in our system. We can have parts of that cycle where we're more emotional and vulnerable. And that if we think about those different hormonal states as access points to different parts of ourselves, right? Now we have this kind of really, you know, we have a capacity to turn towards our cycle and the hormones with curiosity of what does this state hold for me? And maybe for so long, we just had to medicate our way through or stay busy through that. But I think that perimenopause and menopause bring about a whole new phase where it's almost like we can't ignore that, right?
That's
we can't
for sure.
ignore those cycles anymore. And they get louder. They get louder in our awareness. And it can be a profound awakening journey to be curious and embrace and get to know ourselves through those hormonal phases and changes, and to be present with the emotional waves that come closer to the surface in this phase of our lives. I do think it can become a wisening phase, right? We can embrace our own wisdom and kind of moving into that crone phase of life where we become the wise woman, or we can reject it and we can make that wrong. We can medicalize it. And it's a really complex topic because there's a whole lot of literature out there really speaking to how women's changes during menopause get profoundly dismissed in the medical system. And so, yes, we do want the physical symptoms of menopause to be taken seriously, but I also don't want to overly pathologize ourselves and our bodies.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it's just a natural phase of our lives. I think the pathology of it comes from that dismissal of, you know, our whole, everything from PMS to reproductive challenges to perinatal mental health to perimenopause and menopause are all, to birth trauma, all of it is minimized and dismissed by the medical system because it's, you know, patriarchal.
Right. And it also, like, I think that what gets missing is that so often when those symptoms are disrupting our ability to go back and function and get things done and be busy, then we want to fix them. And I think part of, at least for me, the message of perimenopause, I'll be 52 this year, is very much about embracing the slowing down as a gift in itself, that, you know, there are ways in which our culture of busyness is counterproductive. And I think our reproductive systems are yelling and screaming in some way to stop pushing me so hard. So going back to your story, Laura, about, you know, kids leaving the house, shifting into a new phase of life, and finally being able to go in and attend to your own functional freeze or your own emotional body and physical body and back body that was basically just being kind of like dragged along for the ride in order to get everything done, right? And now it's finally like screaming at you, being like, will you just stop and listen to me?
Well, I am very, very grateful for you spending this time with me and sharing with our audience more of the wisdom of more of your wisdom and this ancient wisdom that you're bringing into modern day science through your work, making it so accessible and understandable. And that's very liberating in itself.
Yeah. Thank you. I have a lot of thoughts that are bubbling around and in relationship to this conversation about women and the style of yoga that I teach, you know, that a lot of the movements that you'll find in my classes are very circular. They're rotational movements. They're embodied. And a lot of the yoga that we see out in the world is very linear and angular, right? And so I think that in a sense, as I've tuned into how my body really wants to move, it wants to move in this much more feminine or fluid manner. And I think that's in part what lets those classes kind of stand apart a little bit.
Wow. I'm just going to try to get you to come and talk to me again about that. But it just feels so true what you said, like, you know, and a spiral and just all of those metaphors. That's what I feel in your work. I don't know what it is about that, but it just resonates with me so much. I've said it before, but when we were in Mexico, you know, just the practices that you were doing, you even said in the class, Laura, you probably know a lot of this stuff. You've already been trained in a lot of these practices, but there was something about the way you were teaching and the movement And it's the spiral or the circular aspect of it that's different.
Yes,
and it feels different. It accesses something and it opens something. And I felt that. And I told you, I experienced this big opening from that time in Mexico where I went out of there and had this, you know, like stranger boundary crossing danger situation at the airport that I found this inner strength that I would not have. It was like my body did it, not my mind, because my cognitive brain was still going, what's happening here? And my body just reacted and did what needed to happen. And, you know, I was safe. And so this is real, you know, it's not just like a small distinction that you're making. It's a really important, significant thing. And I'm so happy that you named that out loud, because I didn't connect it until you said that.
And, you know, going back to the wiring of procedural memory, right, even just a short amount of time of practicing this created a really noticeable shift in how you responded to a situation. But now add in that, what if we were to do these practices daily? What gets anchored into your felt sense of self that becomes now intuitive, instinctual? You don't have to think to make these changes happen in how you're showing up in the world. They happen more automatically. And for me, that's really the emphasis that I want to say again and again, is that if you can start to incorporate this, even if it's just 15 minutes a day of a vagal toning practice or 30 minutes of a vagus nerve yoga practice, it will change your life.
I got to say one more thing. Since I've been doing your vagus nerve yoga more regularly, and it's not that regular, but maybe like once every couple weeks. And I also do a yoga class in person here where I live, but it's not the same. I find myself wanting to do it. Not, oh, I should work out, I should move for exercise because it's good for me, but wanting to and craving it. And that's a lot different, because that's coming from inside.
It is so true. And when you can feel how good you feel during and after the practice, that is exactly my experience. Like, I wake up and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get on my yoga mat, right? Like, oh, I get to do this every day.
You are a light in the world. I really mean that. And I'm so grateful to you. I'm so, so grateful to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's, as I said, it's always a joy to be with you.
Thank you. So tell everyone, please, where can they find all of these wonderful things that you do?
All right. Well, I'll start with the YouTube channel, because we've been referencing it a lot. Yeah. So you can find me at Dr. Ariel Schwartz on YouTube. And there's, I don't know, probably up to close to 200 videos on there at this point. Some of them are trauma talks and some of them are guided practices. Most of them are guided practices. You can also find me at drarielschwartz.com, drarielschwartz.com. And I have a new website, resilienceinformedtherapy.com, that also includes just lots of community resources and international community resources of ways to be in touch and do trainings with me. And then, of course, there's lots of books that you can go out there and read. And I always appreciate when people let me know that you've read one of my books and how it touches you, because that's why I write them. So it's beautiful to hear that feedback come back around.
And I know that your books are available on your website. I know they're also available everywhere, but it's the drarielschwartz.com website is where they're found.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, the website just links you back over to Amazon or to Norton or to my publisher's websites. So yes, you know, do find the books. You can also find me at Dr. Ariel Schwartz on Facebook and Ariel Schwartz Boulder on Instagram and all the social stuff. So yay.
I have to tell people, if they don't follow you on Facebook, you post almost every day, usually beautiful photographs that you take of nature, usually with a beautiful poem that either you write or someone wrote that inspired you. It's like, I mean, you're getting some good stuff out of just following someone on Instagram. I mean, Facebook. You share it on Instagram too, but it seems like on Facebook, it's like there's, I guess there's just more words because that's how Facebook is.
Facebook works.
Yeah,
exactly. I always feel a little limited by the word limit on Insta.
Yeah.
it's out there in both. And that's just my happy place, is to be in nature with my camera and catching beauty. So yesterday was Earth Day, and I put on there a collage of photos that I've taken in my favorite places on the planet. And so, you know, you want to scroll back to April 22nd. Look for those photos, folks.
They're pretty. I got to go find that because I haven't been on social media as much lately, but I got to go find that one because those posts that you do really give me life. I comment all the time. I'm like your, you know, weird fan because I'm always commenting, but it's, you know, I'm just getting so much from it. I want you to know.
Oh, thank you. All right.
Thank you again for coming back to Therapy Chat. I'm so glad to talk to you always.
Look forward to next time.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.